What are buyers most worried about in today's market? Well, stay with me, because we're going to talk about that.
You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
Ah! You seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you.
That's it! You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California, member of the National Association of Realtors. But please, don't hold that against me. Here with you once again to do what I do. Hopefully, in a way that will benefit you. Help you to save money, make money, maybe even achieve some goals. That's what we're all about. And today we're going to hit on a topic that, you know, maybe seem obvious to a lot of folks in terms of what concerns buyers the most, but we're going to take a look at what the top five concerns were in 2014 and what the top five concerns are today, and see if that changes at all how sellers can attract buyers. Because remember, the whole thing is about getting the largest number of eyeballs on your property if you're trying to sell it. The larger number of eyeballs, the higher the probability of multiple offers, and the higher the probability of you selling for asking or higher price. And of course, on the flip side, buyers are looking to purchase at an affordable level, something that's not crazy. After yesterday's show, some of you may be questioning whether or not you want to buy at all. If you listen to that and you've sort of done your soul searching and decided whether or not buying makes sense for you, hopefully some of this data will be something you can use. You know, I often talk about not following the crowd in certain directions just because that just means once you get there, there'll be more competition. We'll see if once we've covered some of this basic data, if we can't figure out some techniques for buyers to use out there to try to make a better situation for themselves. So bear with me. Let's cover this stuff and see what we can come up with. Now, this data comes from Redfin. And what's interesting really is to compare last year to this year. Now, there's an even longer list we're going to go through that covers all the various options that were available to them. So we'll get a broader, deeper understanding of the concerns that exist out there for buyers right now in the marketplace. But I thought it'd be kind of neat to do a compare and contrast with 1 year ago from today. Now, in 2014, the number one concern among buyers was inventory. It was not price. Number two in 2014, well, you know, we'll just cover the number one spot. So in 2014, it was inventory, so there just weren't enough homes out there to buy. In 2015, the number one concern for buyers is prices. Now, I think that makes sense given what we've seen, and it's pretty intuitive, given what we've seen in terms of changes in the marketplace, increases in purchase prices, all those kinds of wonderful things. And it's going to be interesting to sort of see the dynamics between the number two item last year and this year. Now, last year, number two was prices. So buyers were more concerned about the number of homes on the market last year than they were about the price of those homes. This year, they're more concerned about the price and – as their second thing, they're still not worried about inventory. They're specifically concerned about competition from other buyers. Now, I would argue that the inventory answer and the competition from other buyers answer really goes hand in hand. They reflect the same problem, kind of. So if you're saying inventory, I think when a buyer is saying that, they're not thinking in terms of competition from other agents. I think that may play a part mentally. But I think they're actually concerned about just a lack of choice, right? They're not seeing a variety of homes. They're not seeing a lot of choices. So when you're faced with something like that, when you're faced with big challenges to inventory and you need to move now, you can't afford to wait for the right home to come along, because the bottom line is, while the right home may be out there and the right home may come along at some point, when you've got inventory trickling in like we do now, you have to start trimming at that list of things that you originally thought you had to have in your new home. Maybe you wanted something move-in ready. Well, maybe you need to step that back a bit to manage the challenges that just exist naturally in the marketplace. So the number one item for 2015 prices, the number two item, competition from other buyers. And that really just reflects that switch, right? Last year, prices was number two. Inventory was number one. This year, inventory doesn't even make it in the top two. It's been overwhelmed by the fact that more buyers have come into the marketplace without an increase in inventory. So now folks are seeing they're having to make multiple offers across multiple months to even have any hope of finding a property. Now, I'm absolutely seeing this as the truth on the ground in terms of buyers making offers and having to make multiple offers on homes at the same time. On almost every home competing with other buyers who are also bidding on the property. The vast majority of homes are going for asking price or higher. What's interesting, though, is I am seeing a little bit of restraint on the part of a lot of buyers, at least in some areas, where they won't bid the price way above asking, simply because I think a lot of folks are still a little bit concerned about that. They are maybe a little bit more concerned about making a huge mistake in their purchase versus just finding something. We'll have to see how things pan out. If I look at my most recent statistics, and these are just the statistics for the last few days, actually over the last 7 days. So over the last week, just in the Morgan Hills, San Martin, Gilroy area. Now, this is not hardcore Silicon Valley. We'll take a quick look at those numbers in a minute. But I thought it would be helpful to sort of get a bird's eye view of what is happening in terms of, you know, how are prices moving. Now, there's absolutely examples of homes that are selling for below list price. Just over the last week, we had at the low end. What's interesting is so many of these are happening at the low end. We had a home listed for $444,000, sold for $400,000. It was on the market for 21 days. We had another home listed for $425,000, sold for $445,000, listed for $449,000, sold for $465,000, listed for $469,000, sold for $470,000, listed for $595,000 or $495,000, sold for $510,000. Listed for $528,000, sold for $528,000. Listed for $560,000, sold for $550,000. So I think, and I can go down this list and we can sort of do percentages and all this other kind of wonderful stuff. But the point I'm trying to make is, despite these challenges, even in a market that's relatively heavily impacted like mine, and granted, a lot of these are happening in Gilroy, which is a lot easier to make these kinds of things happen. Those first bunch I mentioned were all right here in Morgan Hill, which is considered a pretty desirable area once you go outside of Silicon Valley proper. So if we just look at Morgan Hill and look at it just from that standpoint, we've got a list price for a home of $444,000 that sold for $400,000. We've got asking $469,000, got $470,000. Asked $598,000, got $625,000. Asked $649,000, got $643,000. Asked $649,000, got $650,000. Now, these all closed in the last week. Asked $637,000, got $651,000. Asked $649,000, got $652,000. Asked $663,900, got $664,000. Got another one at $749,000, got asking price. Another one at $775,000, got $760,000. One at $799,500 got $790,000. So the point I'm trying to make here, and when we get into the bigger numbers, it even tends to be the same kind of statistic. We do have one where the home was being listed for $1.1 million, sold for $965,000. But by and large, these are all tending to sell pretty close to asking price, in many cases over asking price. But you can still get these prices negotiated down. So for you as a buyer, what difference does it make? What's the key difference in whether or not you're paying asking price or more or under asking price? Well, maybe it's the idea of focusing on some of these more challenged properties. Now, if we take a closer look at the property that sold for $400,000 that was listed at $444,000, you know, that one had stayed on the market a little bit longer. This one was a condominium. Now, we talked about condominiums yesterday. Am I super excited about condominiums? Absolutely not. But at this price, this person has now locked in their monthly expenses and they know what they're going to be, right? So in terms of concerns, now another thing to keep in mind is that this particular property was an REO, so it was a bank selling it, which you know added some hoops, all those other kinds of wonderful things. And this also was one of the properties that ended up being on the auction. So this is one where it went for so much less because of the auction. But remember, there was also a $2,000 buyer premium that had to be added into that and potentially other fees that had to be triggered in. So that's one for that particular property. But that doesn't exclude these other ones that are also below asking price. Let me just pull one up here and see if we can't figure out what the deal was with that. Here's one that sold for $15,000 below asking price. Beautiful single-bedroom home in Morgan Hill. Very mainstream. It had been on the market for 26 days. My guess is that they just didn't get a whole lot of folks looking at it. In order for you to take below asking price, you really would have had to have either several offers come in at below asking, which is a little bit unusual, or you would have had to have someone just one offer coming in. And this is – did I actually get into this? Yeah, this is one I visited. It's actually one I considered making an offer on. I didn't for a variety of reasons. It was things that really aren't important to mention here, but a perfectly good condition, all that kind of wonderful stuff. The bedrooms just weren't really right for what I was looking for. But a perfect example of a property where someone could come in and potentially get a very nice home and get it below asking price. So it can be done, but let's go ahead and flip the switch and look at just all of Santa Clara County, which is going to give us a much bigger sample, and we'll see what kind of performance we saw there. Now, in this case, I'm going to, again, just run the last 7 days. I'm going to run just the basic numbers. I've got specific data for each property, but there's over 300 of them that have closed in a week. But I thought it'd be interesting to get the average numbers. Now, the average home sales price in Santa Clara County, and you're going to love this, the average home for a home that sold was $1,248,787 in the last 7 days. And on average, homes sold for 104% of list price. The average days on market was 22 days, but I'm seeing homes that are on the market for 4 days that were listed at 1.23 million. What else? Let me see some ridiculously short days. 7 days, 820 million that sold for asking. Excuse me. It was listed at 820 and sold for 850. Let's see if there's any change in trend at the lower prices. Now, the lowest price, let's see. Oh, it's not sorted by price. It's sorted by area. So if we go straight into just central San Jose, which is where you're going to probably find some of your better prices, or east San Jose, what do we start seeing? We start seeing prices as low as $575, $540. And even those are above asking price. Now, do I see some below asking price? Yeah, I see one at 96%. That was a $1 million purchase. Another one at $1.5 million at 94%. 97% at $770,000. 98% at $585,000. So if you want to take what the average is and look at it, you can say to yourself, yeah, you know what? On average, people are going to be paying over asking price. They're going to be paying 104%. But that's the average. So you need to focus as a buyer on those instances where folks were able to offer below what the asking price was. It's happening. It's not that everybody's paying that 104%. For that one guy who paid 102 or 103 or 104%, there's that guy who paid 96% or 97%. Now, in scrolling through this list, I'm not seeing anything below the 90s. 96%, there's a 94% over purchasing over $1 million with the house. There's a 95% where the house sold for $377,000. That's fantastic. I mean, it's in central San Jose, which is a little dodgy for some folks, but still that's a great, here's one at 88% that was in Evergreen, which is also, depending on what part of Evergreen, a slightly challenged area, but we're still talking about a $2 million purchase. Where else? Anything lower than 88%? Here's 87% for a $2 million house, 80%, 7% of asking price. It's very depressing numbers. I get that. Here's one that got 57% versus the original sales price. So the asking prices got dropped. When it was compared to the final list price, it was 88% of the final list price. Anything else sexy here for us? No. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is to manage these concerns. When you're going into a marketplace and what you're seeing is really depressing, it's – and no market is more depressing than this market. This San Jose, San Francisco marketplace is absolutely depressing for buyers. But what I want you to do is realize that there are still folks out there getting deals, and the keys to that – are focusing, being able to broaden your gaze in terms of focusing on different areas that maybe you weren't considering before, and make sure you've got a real estate agent who is out there aggressively negotiating for you. I can't stress that enough. You know, even in a market like this, and particularly on the buyer side in a market like this, you need to really step it up in terms of demanding the best from your agent. You need to ask the tough questions. Now, one way you can do that is I've got this great free document that I've put together of the most important questions to ask your real estate agent. I can guarantee you that maybe half of those questions are on any generic list that you're going to find on the internet about what questions to ask your agent. And those are the questions that agents want you to ask. They are the ones that are prepared for. They're the ones that they're trained to answer. However, I've got some beauties on there that they're not trained to answer, that they absolutely have the access to the numbers to answer correctly and honestly. But when you do ask those questions, it will be deer in the headlights time. And for those that react in a shocked way or claim that that doesn't matter or whatever, those are the ones you can pass on. Once you read these questions, you'll get it. So the way to get a hold of that is it's actually free. If you go to my website, www.therebelbroker.com, it's a free gift that I give to you when you sign on and register with the site. So if you want to go ahead and do that, it'll get sent to you automatically. So feel free to do that, and I'll be happy to send that to you. Again, that's www.therebelbroker.com. And that's just a free gift to you for going to the trouble of joining the rebellion with me in mushing through the real estate craziness. So in terms of managing your concerns as a buyer, I think, you know, there are ways to absolutely do it. Don't let this stuff stop you if you've decided that this is the time for you to start doing this. Okay. Now I know we're stuck at number two. Number three. In 2014, the number three concern was competition from other buyers. That's gone up to number two this year. And then the number three position is inventory. They're concerned about the choice of homes that they have. And again, just be willing to embrace techniques that will alleviate this for you. Start broadening that circle of homes, that area you're willing to live in, to the point where you're getting a better selection of inventory. You know, something's got to give in this marketplace. If you're shopping in a super desirable area, well, then you're always going to be faced with this. Number four in 2014 was rising mortgage rates. In 2015, it's selling their current home. That's an amazing one to see hit the number four position, which would indicate to me that folks are selling homes in areas, at least in the majority of cases, because it's a top responding thing. Folks are concerned about selling a home in an area where the seller isn't in the driver's seat. So clearly these are not people in Santa Clara County. They're not people in San Francisco or New York or parts of Los Angeles. So it's interesting that that has risen, because that indicates people moving from a less active area to a more active area, right? In order for that to be in the top five, isn't that sort of a logical thing to assume? And again, for sellers in this position where this is a concern, absolutely your choice of agent. And again, that list of questions to ask your agent is going to be a great tool for you to make the right decision. And be brutal. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you can't afford to pussyfoot around. Even if your favorite nephew is an agent, but he's an idiot, don't use him. And the bottom line is, if you're in a challenged marketplace, and there's plenty of agents that will say, well, you know what, I'll cut my commission if you give me the listing. that will save you far less than the experience will end up costing you if you're in a challenging marketplace. You're going to want the questions I have written down in that free content. You're going to want to get answers to. When you start doing the math and you start realizing how important some of those questions are, you realize there's a direct relationship between the questions I'm suggesting you ask and how much money you'll walk away with or save come the end of the process. So some of those questions are absolutely critical, and no one asks them because no one in the real estate industry wants you to ask them. So no one suggests you ask them. I've never heard anyone else bring up some of the questions that I reveal in that document, and I want you to get a hold of it so that you can benefit from them. All right, number five. This is a weird one. In 2014, the number five concern was fatigue. This wasn't a survey of long distance runners. This was a survey of folks trying to buy a house, and last year one of their top five concerns was fatigue. In 2015, it's down payment, and that absolutely makes sense. If prices is number one, down payment simply goes up, so that makes sense to be in the top five. In terms of managing that, I did a show on lease options a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. I'd suggest you listen to that if you're a buyer looking for more options. Now, let's take a second to look more broadly and just see what the breakup was of the buyer's concern. So at number one, affordability, prices are rising or are too high, was the actual checkmark item they put their checkmark next to, and 27% of buyers noted that as a concern. I'm actually kind of interested that wasn't higher. So just a quarter of buyers. It's different when you sort of arrange this list of the highest concern, and then to realize that only 27% of buyers are actually worried about it. Next comes there's too much competition from other buyers. That's 17%. So a full 10% delta between concern of prices versus competition. I'm actually kind of surprised in a more general national trend that these numbers are where they are. Some of these folks were clearly in very high impacted areas like mine. Number three was there aren't enough the next on this list, I'm seeing some other weird stuff at the bottom here that's higher percentages. But anyway, there aren't enough homes to choose from. See, that's the inventory concern, and that's exactly the way it should be phrased for that to make sense for the way we were anticipating it. And that's 14%. I need to sell a home first, 8% worried about that. I might not have enough for a down payment, 6% worried about that. Mortgage rates will go up before I can buy, 5%. So only 5% of buyers worried about that. I might have trouble getting a loan, 3%. I'm worried about the economy or job security, 3%. The process is discouraging or confusing, 3%. Other, 5%. No major concerns, 10%. So a full 10% more buyers. There are more buyers with no major concerns than there are buyers that are worried about the process being discouraging, confusing, that and have no concerns, outnumber the people who are not worried about the economy or jobs, or that they might have trouble getting a loan, or that mortgage rates will go up before they can buy, or that they might not have enough for a down payment, or I need to sell a home first. More people are not worried at all than all of those things. That kind of blows my mind. I mean, I get that the major media approach to this data is just to sort of tell us what the top concern is. The fact that the top concern was only the top by being 27% is kind of mind-blowing. But what's interesting is it seems to me that a huge chunk of these folks are not going into this eyes wide open in terms of understanding what's going on with the economy and the potential problems in the job market as we see sort of a contraction as international stuff pushes businesses into a corner. Kind of interesting stuff, right? So these are the folks, you buyers out there who are paying attention, educating yourself, getting more information, cranking the knowledge up to 11, so to speak. You're way ahead of the game. You would have probably answered these questions completely differently. Because I'll tell you what, while prices are a problem, I agree in a lot of areas, you can still negotiate deals that are below asking price. Not everything is getting blown out, even in a market like Silicon Valley, Santa Clara County, where it's nuts. Not everything is selling above asking price. You can still negotiate a better deal for yourself. So with that knowledge, you buyers should go out there feeling pretty comfortable that you've got a little bit more on the ball than the average buyer out there. Don't just resolve that, well, I guess I have to pay more in order to make this work. I'll have to do assume there's going to be a multiple offer on this house. It's not always true. How do you figure that out? Well, a lot of times you can up front. An agent may tell you there's multiple offers and there aren't. Does that happen all the time? No. Has it happened? And I know it's happened a few times. Yeah, absolutely. Quick story. Last year this happened and I had a client who was thinking about putting an offer down on a house. The selling agent, the listing agent, was talking like there were offers coming in and you need to have something in by 5 o'clock or, you know, there was no way. Well, there was no way my folks could even get to a computer before 5 o'clock to digitally sign their documents. I had everything ready for them to go, but one of them was in a position where they just couldn't, they couldn't get to a computer. If I'm not mistaken, he worked for the Forest Service, but in any event, we even had trouble just getting him on the phone. So the day comes and goes and we figure, well, we'll just move on. We'll keep searching. We'll find something else. I get a call the next day saying, hey, from this same agent saying, have you decided to submit an offer? And I said, well, you said the deadline was 5 o'clock yesterday. My folks just couldn't put anything together in time. Oh, well, we'll still be willing to look at it. And I said, well, are there other offers? And they said, well, the door's open for that. And my folks had actually decided not to make an offer at all at that point. What do I end up discovering? A few weeks later, that property sold for below asking price but didn't go into escrow till about a week and a half after that deadline. So there's always shenanigans going on to one degree or another. You may stumble across an agent who's totally on the up and up, and that's fantastic. But I need you to not worry about that. I need you in your mind to decide, I am in this for the long haul to achieve my goal, which means I don't want to spend more than a certain amount of money, or I've been approved for this amount, but I'd like to purchase at this price, and I think I should be able to reasonably find something at that price. But then be willing to just saddle up, put on the seatbelt, and make potentially dozens of offers. Now, we went through the numbers. Over 300 homes sold in Santa Clara County for below asking price. It was a lot more than a third of them, right? Probably 40% from what I was seeing in my scroll. Let's go worst case. Let's go 30%. So that would mean that you're going to have to, for every time you're going to get an offer accepted, you're going to make 10, right? Is that bad? No, that's actually pretty reasonable. So if you mentally prepare yourself for making 20 offers before you're going to get one where you're able to get a better price on it, then you're set. You're ready to rock it. You're ready to make this happen. So in terms of techniques to manage this, now for sellers, is there anything sellers need to learn from this? Well, I think that in the long run for you, your house is going to sell, right, in most marketplaces. The difference that's going to be made is in how efficiently, how well, how fast it's going to sell. My argument is that just because your house will sell because that's the way the market's running, you still want to jump through the hoops and make that careful decision on what real estate agent you're going to work with. You don't necessarily want to go with the person who's the top producer in your neighborhood. You don't want to go with the guy who's got signs all up and down the street. What does a for sale sign tell you? It tells you the person has a listing on a house and it hasn't sold yet. If you've seen some of those signs out for a long time, well, then that house still hasn't sold. And again, I'm going to point back to the questions I suggest you ask the agent that are going to be in that as a free gift to you when you register at therebelbroker.com. A little pop-up will come up. Go ahead and jump through the hoops and you will get a free copy of that. And more power to you. I think you'll really find those questions useful, and I hope it's a resource that you can make use of. And I suggest it for both buyers and sellers. It's got questions that are frankly carry the most power for sellers, but there are some great buyer questions in there that absolutely need to be answered. So while I offer a few more prices if you're a seller, or a few more questions for a seller that'll be a little bit more powerful, there are definitely a handful of them in there for buyers that'll find them almost as useful as the ones for the – and the reason for that is the stats, right? There's it's far tougher to get stats on a buyer's agent than on a seller's agent because there's just not as many things to judge them on, right, in terms of statistics that are kept within the multiple listing service. All right. So that's it. That covers the top five items that concerns most buyers right now. We've also managed to hit the breakup of those items, which I find stunning. You know, I'm going to include this in the article that as the show gets posted to therebelbroker.com. I'll include this chart. I'll include a link to the original, and you guys can all go take a look at that and see if there's any more data from there that will benefit you or help you make better decisions in the real estate world. In the meantime, head on over to therebelbroker.com. I would be forever in your debt if you could support the show. Subscribe to it in iTunes. Even if you're not an iTunes user, go over and do a review of it over in iTunes. That would be greatly appreciated. It makes the difference between whether or not I can make this a full-time, always looking for new information for you, making it as valuable as possible for you, whether I can do this and make it free to you or find some other way to reach out to as many people as possible, but then potentially have to charge for it. So this is all free to you. One way I can do this for you is if we really get the show to the point where it's getting a lot of attention, and then I can make that work for both of us in terms of providing you with free content and giving me the freedom to focus more on this show. So I appreciate that. So head on over to rebelbroker.com to get that started. There is a link to iTunes there. Thanks again, folks. I will talk to you all tomorrow. And, we're going to do 5 shows this week, so we're definitely going to do another show. And then I will absolutely be talking to you again on Monday. So have a good one. Bye-bye.